positive. Our prediction for this time, last week was 103 positives. So our positive count slightly behind what we were predicting. Does that mean that we don't have anything to worry about? Absolutely not. I think that Dr. Dixon will discuss that. There are several point-of-care testing centers that have opened up throughout the county. Most of the point-of-care testing centers are basically for money. For example, America's DR is now officially open. They've been claiming that they were going to. And they're supposedly going to be open from 8 in the morning to 6 in the evening, 7 days a week. Anybody can go in for any reason. If you've got $150 cash, they'll do your testing for it. Also, I wanted to update you because we had a high incidence of patients in the Woodlands area at the Conservatory at Alvin Bridge. At the Conservatory at Alvin Bridge, we worked with Judge Keogh and his group yesterday, and Judge tightened the orders there so that they could be more closely managed and watched. He did that in coordination with Dr. Sims. And the county attorney.
And on that note, I just wanted y'all to be aware that Dr. Ibrahim and the Public Health Department has been working with them since March 21st. They were monitoring and tracing those clients that had been exposed. I'm trying to nail down those exposures, and they were cooperative. However, over the weekend, visitation was a high amount with children and families visiting their loved ones that should not have been happening, and there was still some residents visiting with each other out in the public area. So in order to protect that community, the order was issued.
Okay. No, thank you so much for that. One last thing, and then I'm going to turn over to Dr. Dixon and let him talk a little bit of medicine. A lot of people have been asking me, Randy, why aren't we doing tests for the general public? Well, there's a couple of reasons. The first one being, we don't have an availability of tests. We have been able to get just enough tests to be able to test our first responders in the community who need to be checked and followed up so that they can get back on trucks and back to work. And we've done well managing that. Dr. Dixon has worked with a colleague of his in South Florida, and quite possibly we'll have a new blood test that will be available to us by the end of the month, or sorry, by the end of the week. And that test is quite inexpensive. It's a blood test that has an immediate result from the test being taken. And if we can get that, Dr. Dixon has looked at it, and he believes that that's going to be a game changer for us. Also, the producer for that test, if we can get it, he's going to be able to start producing up to 20,000 tests per day. And so it may be that we can work in conjunction with Lone Star Family Center to do some sort of a drive-through testing program the next week or so as soon as the tests become available, if in fact they do. And with that, I'll turn over to Dr. Dixon.
Thank you, Richard. Good afternoon. Just a couple of things to start. I think we're probably in line with the predicted model on number of cases. I think it within 10%, so I would not expect a big drop off there, as Randy said. And we are preparing for it to follow the model. We don't know when it's going to hit the apex, i.e. the number of cases is going to settle. There's lots of different models out there that take this a good part into the summer, into the end of June. So we'll hope for the best, but we're always pragmatic and trying to prepare the crews to respond and be as safe as we can. We've worked a lot this week on algorithms and trying to stay with the latest science to benefit the patients, but also to do it in a way where we can keep our crews safe. And so we're working on some novel airway management algorithms that we just got off a meeting with the district chiefs with, and we'll be putting those out by the end of this week. We have some education that follows those, so Dr. Patrick's working on a podcast to put out in conjunction that kind of explains some of the why behind why we're making these changes. To pivot a little bit on testing, I think a lot of people, the culture has been incredibly bright idea for Chief Campbell and the team to man up the call center, and has provided us the resources, the paramedics in there, the call center personnel, and public health input to field all these calls. There's an immense, immense public anxiety about this. I get it. I understand it. I think the call center serves a couple of purposes. Number one, it really is a force multiplier for us to sort out these patients that are just worried, have a small question or maybe a small concern, and not necessarily have to use a very extensive response with a couple of paramedics and PPE and things to handle that. The second thing it does is it allows us to stratify where these patients are best looked after, i.e., I'm so worried about the COVID and I really want my test. I don't have any symptoms, but I don't care. I want my test so I can feel better. I'm sure there will be plenty of people here that will sell you a test at some point. There are some that fit the higher risk criteria, especially our elderly, our nursing home residents, and we really want to try to get into testing. We are working with our partners at Lone Star and our other hospital partners, but mainly the Lone Star group, very closely to develop a process. We met on Monday morning with the executive team here and the leadership from Lone Star to develop a process where we were the screeners, and then the testing, off-site testing, would be done by Lone Star. So we expect some feedback and kind of a detail out. We had a to-do list by the end of the week, and I'm hoping that by the time we meet next to solidify the process and have it with the board. We talk about treatment. I think that there is a lot of anxiety over treatment. I would say that if you are young and healthy and you see me in the emergency department and you have a fever of 102 and a flu-like illness, you may well have to come. And you are going to get a thorough exam and to make sure that you are not low on your oxygen levels or you don't have any risky findings on your clinical exam. You're going to get a chest x-ray from me to make sure you don't have lower airway disease or signs of pneumonia. If you don't have any of those things, I'm not going to give you a COVID test. Why? Because it's just too right now, a limited resource that's not very helpful when it comes back 7 days later, because in 7 days, you are either sicker and you have pitched back up and I told you to come back if you get short of breath or other things, or you're better. Congratulations, you're a COVID survivor. So this testing is limited, very, very limited, for we need to use it right now on our sickest patients, I believe, are who needs to get this test, where it really changes our behavior and what we do. Because of the influx, and now we're getting more test kits, the delay in some of these labs, up to 7 days, what's the longest?
Yeah,
we've seen the test come back 10 days later. The patient is clearly well by then.
Today, we get a test back.
Yes.
It's not late from the carrier to us. It was from the time they were tested until the results were sent back to the provider.
Right. So this is, and to remind everyone, this is the reverse the PCR, which is limited chain reaction, big doctor word, where they take the gene sequence that is known to that virus, and they swap a bunch of cells in the back of your nasal pharynx, so they try to torture you with this big, long probe in the back of your nose. They get some cells, and they smush them all up, and then they amplify those sequences that are known to be in the virus. So if they're there, it's a very good test. The problem with it is if you don't get a lot of cells on there, it's dependent on the sample, and it can be a false negative about 30% of the time. We have worked with a colleague for a number of years that we've collaborated with on many projects that we know quite well out of South Florida. It's another kind of pediatric emergency physician, and got a vendor through him for an antibody test. This is a blood test. It's a rapid test. So this is one of the first point-of-care tests. The FDA has just released these onto the market and limited. They've given an emergency order for some companies to develop these. One of those companies, about 15 companies, around the world. One of those is in China. This is the one that we're using to source from. So these are quite inexpensive. Our colleague got us a really good deal, $15 a test. What is it going to tell us? It shows whether or not the patient's blood has the immune response to the virus. And there's two types of immune response. There's kind of one I would call the near phase response, and then there's the long-term protective phase. And the first one's called IgM, and the second one's called IgG. So if Randy gets the virus today, his DNA test, his nasal test is probably going to be negative. If I just chuck a bunch of virus at him and he eats it with his lunch, he's going to get sick, but he's not sick right now. Both of those tests are going to be negative. If you wait about 4 or 5 days when Randy starts feeling unwell, those tests, the DNA test maybe is likely going to be positive if you get a good sample, but so is the blood test. So a couple days after Randy starts getting fever and sick, his body is going to form these antibodies to the virus, the first one being IgM, which comes up about 5 to 7 days after the initial infection. So by the time Randy starts getting febrile, we expect to see those reactions in the blood. So that's going to tell us two things. I think it's going to be very helpful for our organization here and our FROs, is if the IgM or the early phase is up alone, that tells me the patient's early in his infection. I got to keep Randy off for that 14 days. Or tell me he's fever free for 3 days and has 7 days into his illness. So I got to follow those CDC guidelines. If the IgM, Randy's better, and he's a doc, I've had my fever last week, now I'm better, and I test him, and his IgM is negative, it's gone down to where it's undetectable, but his IgG is positive, I know that Randy actually had the virus, but he's recovered. And if he's asymptomatic, he can go back to work. He's actually a COVID protected now. So it's a complex test to explain. I hope I've done a good job. If you have any questions, I'm happy to take them. I think that it's going to be a game changer for us. Not only, are we going to have more tests, and Randy authorized us to block 500 of these tests. We hope they get delivered so we can start using them to get our crews back out into the field, make sure that we're doing timely screening. If we do the blood test, I have an answer in a minute, rather than 7 to 10 days.
So, and hopefully, supposedly those tests are supposed to be in before the end of this week. We've heard that from a lot of different vendors, so we shall see.
Mr. Chan, to answer your question, he's asking if the low number of tests and the delayed results create a false sense of security for people in the county that think that we have a low number of tests, so maybe we don't need to stay home. And the answer to that is yes. If there's a low number of tests and delayed results, it does make people think, well, it's not as bad as we think. We still don't have a grasp on our community spread. I think we could say that many of our positive patients who are at home could have family members with symptoms, and often they're not tested. They just tell them all to stay in the house for 14 days, unless they're high risk for hospital admission, i.e. the comorbidities that the CDC has outlined.
Also, anecdotally, we've had ER doctors telling us that they think that they're seeing lots of patients with very few symptoms coming in that they think are COVID positive. And we've got lots of COVID in the community. So now we have community spread. It's basically us. So we're just waiting for the numbers to grow.
Yes, you said, so just push the signs and symptoms versus not. So when you call the call center, if you're symptomatic, they're urging you to stay at home unless you're high risk, diabetes, existing lung disease, things like that, where you're at risk for hospital use.
Asthma, cardiac disease,
correct. Elderly patients get tested.
Yes, our more assumed cases, which I would call those, than actually ones that have gone and been tested in our hospital.
Correct.
The assumed cases are more than the 93%.
Yeah, so I think point well taken, sir. I think that whenever the public sees this on TV and says, well, that's not too bad, they don't really understand viral storm downtown, and of all the testing they've done, about 13% of those people are positive. So you can extrapolate that. That's how many infections are out there. And those 30% of those are false negatives. The number's probably higher than that. So if you even took 10% of our population is being infected, and I think that's probably could be a fair number here in a week or so. That's a fair number of infections. We just simply aren't testing them.
Yeah, looking at our numbers, we believe that really beginning next week is when we're going to see the deluge of patients into the hospital and into healthcare. We hope we're wrong, but that's what we're predicting.
I'll do a quick update for EMS. We implemented, over the weekend, N95s on every response. So we talked about it last week in this meeting. So now every time we go on scene, no matter what the call type is, we're wearing an N95 mask. And that's dramatically decreased our rate of exposures, especially high-risk exposures as defined by the CDC. So we're feeling confident about staffing. As we plan for what could potentially be a surge, we feel like we're hitting it in full stride from a staffing standpoint, knock on wood. So we feel good about that. We feel good about our PPE supplies, although we're continuing to try to source for the long haul, especially gowns and gloves. So we want to make sure that we're trying to stay ahead and not get behind. So materials, really our logistics and support staff have been tremendous throughout this, and really can't thank them enough. Call volume has been still on the low side. We haven't really returned to this baseline from this time of year. We were about 15% to 20% drop in 911. Now we're about 5% to 8% drop in the responses per day. And it's slowly creeping to the baseline, but we have not exceeded what we would normally do this time of year. And we've expanded a little bit of our ICS model just down into the depths of EMS. So now we have a deputy chief in here every day, and we're really communicating with the district chiefs, and the district chiefs are filling out 214 ICS forms, so that's how you track everything on a daily basis. So we've expanded that to the district chiefs and deputy chiefs. So what's been unique about this is the prolonged time of this event has given us a good opportunity to slowly roll some things out, but at the same time, we've been able to adjust pretty quick. So everything we implemented 2 weeks ago, we're going back and looking at and seeing if that's still the best practice. Is there anything that we need to change as we learn from our peers and colleagues from around the country? So, we've been doing good.
Okay, I received a note from Duke Coon. He said, can we explain the model and where we are today on the count? On our model, when we were predicting that today we would have 103 positives. We actually have 93 positives. So we're running about 10 people behind our count for today's model.
I would say that's inaccurate only because initially we were counting today's count at 9 p.m. when this model was done. That count, because of the state wanting it by noon, now happens at noon. So we're missing a full 9 hours of reports that could be coming in. So it's very possible that by 10 p.m. tonight, which these are based on, that we will be at 103.
The instrument that Chief Dawes developed here is kind of off a bunch of different prediction instruments. One that was published in the Lancet that came from Italy that looked at the virus spread there and the cases, then you extrapolate the hospitalizations for those cases. So the number of cases that you know about, that's not the one we don't know about. It's the same in Italy, right? They didn't have a ton of early testing and things, too. So we think that our numbers will look about the same, but this model has been pretty freakishly close. So I would expect those numbers to be accurate. What we don't know, as Randy said, is where when we get a virus in the community, and clearly here, people have had it, and we have patients, and we have employees that have recovered. And so they're less likely to get reinfected. So you get something kind of called herd immunity. And where is that level where it will level off, and our number of cases, instead of going up like this, will level off? I'm not sure that anybody knows that. Everything has been measured around from mid-May to end of May, and I'm just not quite sure. I think we're going to have to as we test for, hopefully we'll have a better prediction model.
But if we use today's number of 93 cases rather than 103 total cases, and we project that forward, if we look at April 7th, that would project us at 484 cases versus the original projection of 534. And then you look a week later, rather than having 3,516, we would have 3,189. So even if those projections, they're reducing hold, we still think that between the end of next week and the beginning of the following week, it's going to be a very busy time. We're seeing more and more cases that we're following. So I hope that these reduced numbers are good news, but I think we really need to just patiently and diligently watch and be prepared for the next week and 15 days. Any questions?
I was just going to say, on a positive note, we have 14 recoveries as of today. Only 12 remain hospitalized. So that has been a good news. We actually had some of the recoveries come away. That is through the window because they're so excited. So there are good things happening. One of our public health employees and our laserfish person have been working on an outward-facing form that will allow people under monitoring to go on and fill out the forms themselves rather than have to rely on phone calls and texts, which we think will give us better reporting information. And that should be live on Thursday for trial and then be live on Friday, barring any problems.
Mr. Martin, I know you came on late onto the podcast. Is it possible that Doc and I can give you a call after this meeting and we can give you an update on what we're doing and how we're going about taking care of patients and how we're planning? That probably would be helpful for you and you can get more specific information. Is that okay?
Melissa, this is Justin. Can you hear me?
Yes.
How many patients did you say had recovered? I couldn't hear you.
14. One four.
Outstanding. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We are not responsible for it, but we are coordinating with Darren Hess, who is responsible for coordinating all of our emergency response in the county. And we've been discussing that, and we've been looking at those processes. We've been looking at taking over hotels if we need post-acute care for hospitalized patients. We've also looked at some hospital space that we think may be available that hasn't been counted yet in the county. So we're definitely looking at that. We have some alternative plans should we need them. Our original model showed that we might need as many as 31 ICU beds above what our capacity is, and we may need as many as 90 beds above what our overall hospital capacity is. I'm sorry, we need 31 ICU beds above our capacity and 94 total hospital beds above our capacity. We think that we can manage that, and we were watching that very closely.
And Darren, through the OEM, has made a STAR request up to the state to get us in line for temporary hospitals that they can roll out.
But we also want to make sure we can manage for ourselves if we can't get temporary.
Yeah, we are planning to do it ourselves with the hope of not having to rely on anybody else to come in and save us because they very rarely do.
Especially if it's spread in the region.
Yeah, usually it's in first.
So this is kind of timeline of what our days look like. At 10 a.m. every morning, we have a situation report with this table, our leadership, as well as OEM as a representative, and then Tuesday, Office of Emergency Management. And then after this call, on Tuesday and Friday, we have a hospital call, so it's all the hospital. And over time, those calls have gotten very productive, especially when it comes to sharing resources and giving an update on what each hospital, if Montgomery County has available and how they're preparing. And then after that, we followed up with a first responder law enforcement call on Tuesdays and Fridays, so we can really make sure that as a county, we're working through this together.
And the team here has done a fantastic job of coordinating and taking care of the first responders and planning for the future. So Dr. Dixon has done an outstanding job coordinating both the public health response and the EMS response. So hats off to Chief Campbell and Dr. Dixon. So if there's no other further questions, we'll get off the call and we'll thank you very much. And
hey, Randy.
Yes.
I have a couple questions just circling back to the testing.
Okay.
I know we've been trying to get tests. We unable to get tests. You know, what? Where have we seen the breakdown in that supply chain? Is that something at the state level? Is that coming from the federal level? Is, you know, the state has pushed testing. You know, the state pushed testing out in San Antonio first. You know, and running these drive-through testing, of course, you know, it helps when you're up again as with the fire chief there. But what is the breakdown? What's the holdup? Because I'm getting tons of questions on, you know, why don't we have the capacity?
We've had breakdowns at every level. We haven't had anything.
We put a start request in back March 7th or 8th, I would have to go look at that date. Less than 1,000, we received 6. And as late as yesterday, we were told that those had been back ordered, and we would hope to receive them in August. That was our message from the state. We've been sorting through every other method possible for us, trying to find them. And we've been able to secure enough to take care of our first responders, but the general public, not so much. One of the issues is, as a public health district and as NCHD, that's not something we order routinely or ever, because we don't test for the flu or use these viral medias for anything we do, which does not put us on allocation from our manufacturers that we purchase from. So those are the people that purchase those routinely first. And then you have organizations that see this as a way to get rich quick, and they're purchasing up large volumes of them so that they can charge for testing to the community. And that just leaves us
off. Whatever's left over.
But I think hopefully Dr. Dixon has done a fantastic job of sourcing through.
Yeah.
One of his esteemed colleagues in Florida. And I think that we're going to be able to get a test that we're going to have to pay as much as $75 or $15. So if that's the case, if it works and if the flow starts to open, we may be able to get enough tests. But through Lone Star, we can also do community testing in the next few years.
One of our members is going to be a very awful death in trying to force these tests as well.
And then you mentioned, I know America's ER is setting up their right here around the corner from where I live on Stonebridge Church. Do we have a list of any other facilities that are providing testing like that?
We do, and we give those names out to the people who call in from our call center. They check in the morning to see if they still have tests, and we give those names out to those that call in. They have asked that we do not publish them, but provide them to those that call in.
Okay.
How many ventilators do
we have now?
What percent are
currently being used?
The county or as NCHD? We can't.
Well, okay, ventilators in the county, we do not have that number. The hospitals have not been reporting it. We're going to get on a hospital call after this, and we'll have a better idea. Our last hospital call on Friday, all the hospitals claimed that they had plenty of ventilators. And they were not near capacity. I would assume that's still the case to a great degree. And so between Petrac and our calls with Darren Hess and OEM, the Office of Emergency Management, we're working to get those numbers. But we don't have them right now. But we do think there's plenty of capacity.
And for as far as NCHD goes, we have a ventilator on every every ambulance, and we had our only ventilators that we still had PM'd, and we have 30 of those that will be ready to go by the end of the week should we need them. Yes, it is after they're screened for the testing that they're given the site.
So direct people to call in and go through the screening process if they that's the best route to go.
Yes.
Changes every
morning because of it. When they run out of gas, they're on the list the next day.
Any more questions? Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. It is now 2:32, and we are adjourned. Thank you.